Wisconsin I is at the 2019 Republican State Convention. We're interviewing former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, who has a new exciting gig that I want to ask you about. Go ahead. You're in. Are you? How much are you in Washington now? What are you doing? It's exciting. Go.
A lot. I'm in Washington a lot. Right now, my intention is to be there as needed. It's just that right now I need a lot because I am the executive director of the Women's Suffrage Centennial Commission.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That is a federal mini micro agency that is not under the umbrella of the Department of the Interior or any other federal agency. It's its own entity. And so for the last number of months, I have literally been starting a federal agency from scratch. So imagine being a startup, but then following all the rules and the regs of the federal government, because it doesn't matter the size of your agency, you still have the same rules that you have to follow. So it's been fascinating, and the federal government is exactly what I imagined, and I
is
love...
Is that good or bad?
Go ahead and draw your own conclusions, Steve. And I love what I do because the Women's Suffrage Centennial Commission has the job, created by Congress, of coordinating all of the country's activities related to the centennial, the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, women's right to vote.
And which state voted for those first?
Thank you. The state of Wisconsin voted to ratify the 19th Amendment first.
Because Illinois' wording was wrong. But go ahead.
You know, the story goes that
We're number one.
We are number one.
Number one.
It is the day that we made a routine out of beating Illinois. So the world is welcome because that was, I think, an epic win for the state of Wisconsin, but additionally for all the women of America, because do you believe that it has only been 100 years that women have had the right to vote in the United States of America? It's shocking when you think about it.
Yeah, it really is. So you had to build a mini federal agency from scratch.
Yes.
And you have a budget of?
$4 million.
$4 million. And... is it funded by Congress? Is it funded?
It is appropriated by the federal government.
Is it affected by things like shutdowns?
During the shutdown, I was one of the few government employees still working. And it was fascinating because some of the things that you could usually lean into the expertise of a variety of federal workers that had experience in, say, publishing a meeting notice in the Federal Register, all of a sudden, there was no one to call. And so... I figured it out myself. But you know what? From my past job, I'm used to being nimble. I'm used to trying my very hardest to be small but mighty and making sure that taxpayers always get a good value. Customer service was always very important to me as Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, and delivering a good value for taxpayer dollar was always a priority. And I think that that's what we're going to do here with the Women's Suffrage Centennial Commission. We're running it in a very similar way that I ran my Lieutenant Governor's office, and I think people are going to be really pleased. We have our first two really huge centennials coming up. May 21 is when you'll see the United States House, and June 4 is when you'll see the United States Senate commemorate to the date the 100-year anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment out of those chambers. And you're going to see something really unique out of the U.S. Congress, everyone doing the same thing, Steve. We're going to reaffirm the 19th Amendment, and the members are all going to be wearing yellow roses on their lapels. This harkens back to the 36th and final state to ratify the 19th Amendment, Tennessee. You've probably heard of the War of the Roses, which didn't happen in America. This is the American War of the Roses we're talking about. In Tennessee, heat of August, 1920, the suffragists, those who wanted women to have the right to vote, all wore yellow roses on their dresses and lapels and encouraged legislators who were about to vote whether to ratify the 19th Amendment to do the same. So they essentially marked their territory. Those who were anti-suffrage, didn't want women to vote, wore red roses and encouraged the like sign. So on the day of the vote, the whole chamber was practically abloom with roses. Everyone was wearing them. And the speaker, who was against suffrage, wore a red rose. could look across the gallery the same as anyone else and see who is there, and then look at the floor and see that the red roses outnumbered the yellow. And he decided to call the roll. But to add to the suspense, just as everyone voted with the like sign of their rose, all the red ones voted no, all the yellow ones voted yes, there was a kind of a pause. A young legislator, 24 years old, voted your red rose, voted yes.
Okay.
And changed the path of Tennessee, hastened American history, and it ends up that this young man, Harry Byrne, wore a red rose, certainly on his lapel, but just under that lapel in his breast pocket, he carried a letter from his mother urging him to vote for women's rights. Mother knows best,
that's
Steve.
That's fascinating.
So everyone will wear those yellow roses. Watch for it.
In the second week of last November, you were looking for another career challenge. Mm-hmm. How did this new opportunity come up?
I was the chairman at the time of the Women's Suffrage Centennial Commission. And as I made my calls and started exploring options and was weighing a number of different opportunities, this kind of tugged at my heart, because you know that every year from the Lieutenant Governor's office, we usually take on some sort of national chairmanship. Last year it was the Aerospace States Association. Yeah. We try and leave the organization with more members, better visibility, and in really good shape. And this was going to be my project for the next 2 years. We're going to take this on as an office. It was going to be amazing. We're going to coordinate the country's centennial of women's suffrage. It was a perfect fit. Mm-hmm. And then I lost my job.
Yep.
And as I'm looking at these other job opportunities, I'm reflecting, how am I going to do what I wanted to do, execute it to the level of professionalism and efficiency and efficacy, beauty, memorability that I had planned, if I'm not right there? Because by this time, I had already done all of the vision casting documents. Yep. Yep. And I had started making calls. And after reflecting, I thought there's not one of these jobs that's going to permit me the time that I need in order to make this what I want. And I decided that I was going to resign from the commission, and I was going to resign my chairmanship, and I was going to apply for the executive director job.
Well, as a former journalist, you are well aware of the power of story. How are you going to use the power of story to tell what it meant to women when they got the right to vote across America and in Wisconsin?
Steve, this was all about stories. When the suffragists got on trains and used automobiles and stationed themselves on soapboxes and street corners in order to tell compelling stories of why they needed the vote, that's how they convinced people to listen to them, first of all, and that's how they convinced all male legislators at the time to give them this opportunity for enfranchisement. If they hadn't told compelling stories, if they hadn't produced compelling images, there is no way they would have gotten what truly they needed in order to protect their lives and livelihoods. Because you're going to have to remember that at that time, 100 years ago in America, women didn't have a ton of rights in the way we look at our lives today. If you were widowed or if you were single, your right to your own wage was even in question. If for some reason your husband was no longer there, your right to raise your own kids was all of a sudden in question. And if you want to talk about the very American ideal of no taxation without representation, well, my goodness, these female wage earners were going out and working hard in order to produce for the American economy and definitely survive in their own households, but they weren't represented. They didn't have a choice. And so what enfranchisement would have done in that moment is empower women with a voice at the ballot box.
Is there one story that has captured your heart? Is there one woman, have you heard one anecdote that you want to share right now?
Oh, golly.
That really broke your heart in terms of what it meant for this woman to get the right to vote? And if none comes to mind, I'll ask another question.
There are a ton of those stories. And incidentally, Susan B. Anthony, after whom the 19th Amendment is named, it's called the Susan B. Anthony Amendment, did not live to see the passage of the 19th, nor did Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Mm-hmm. I think the tenuous hour at which these women lived, and men, I mean, there were plenty of men who were suffrage activists, shows us just how controversial this was. When I think about the most controversial movement in Wisconsin history, you know, at first I think, well, golly, it was my recall. I was the only lieutenant governor in American history to face a recall election. Mm-hmm. Surely it was that moment. And then when I get reflective, 1912, you know, we tried to put woman suffrage and enfranchisement into law. It failed.
It did.
Big. And so this was terribly controversial. But additionally controversial was the tension between the suffrage activists who wanted women's rights put first and those suffrage activists who wanted to enshrine those voting rights for all Americans. I remember this time period.
Yes.
Just post-Civil War. Frederick Douglass was a suffragist. In fact, in 1848, Frederick Douglass was one of the speakers at the first ever Women's Rights Convention in Seneca Falls, New York. 1848, he was one of the ones who was there witnessing the Declaration of Sentiments. It was almost like a Declaration of Independence for women voters and those men who stood with them. Frederick Douglass was a great human being, not just a great orator, not just an advisor of presidents, but also someone who fought for true equality. And there was a parting of the ways between Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, those early suffrage movement leaders, and Frederick Douglass when he said, listen, I'm going to have to go with the 15th Amendment here because for black men to get the right to vote, literally is protecting our lives. You guys aren't worried about walking down the street and winding up the day.
Completing the journey.
With your spouse crying over your death.
Yeah.
That was America in that moment. And, you know, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony said, no, we're going to prioritize the women's vote. And so, you know, there was tension in that moment, and I'm pleased to say that it was resolved before their deaths. And in fact, they remained close. Susan B. Anthony delivered the eulogy at Frederick Douglass's funeral. But I think those stories, though they may not be those wonderful TV news stories where people end up crying tears of joy, mm-hmm. those stories are the ones that allow you to think, well, America today may be really imperfect, and we may really disagree on a lot of things, but my goodness, there are so many people who are willing to give their lives and livelihoods so that we have the opportunities and those constitutional rights that make us the greatest country on earth.
You're about to give a speech noting that Wisconsin was the first to ratify.
Mm-hmm.
Call the role of a few heroes in Wisconsin.
Sure.
Who really led the fight for passage. Their names.
Well, Olympia Brown is one that I think has a story that resonates with a lot of people. Very, very early. I mean, we're talking, you know, 100 years ago now. She was actually a pastor of a church. I mean, talk about a tough female leader in her community, scene-based. And she kind of had the same idea as Susan B. Anthony, that she was a citizen. And Susan B. Anthony said, I am a citizen. I am voting under the 14th Amendment. She went out, voted for president. She wrote a letter to her friend Elizabeth Cady Stanton saying, I just voted for president, straight ticket Republican. And obviously she was hauled off. And she went to jail, the whole bit. And it ended up, she had every hope that she would be able to battle this all the way to the Supreme Court and she would be able to enshrine women's voting rights because it wasn't happening in a legislative way. Couldn't originate from the executive branch, so she said, well, let's go ahead and try it through the judicial branch, and it didn't work. A man bailed her out of jail, so she was never able to take her battle all the way to the Supreme Court. Olympia Brown, very similar story, because at the time, women in Wisconsin had the rights to vote in school-related elections.
Only?
Only. That's a story that's going to be way longer than what we have time for right now.
Right.
But she went and she said, well, this municipal election, this statewide election, they all have to deal with education. I'm voting in them. And the same thing happened. She had hoped for a challenge and to battle it through the courts. They didn't side with her. What ended up happening was that they created two separate ballot boxes. And this was after a very long court battle, but women weren't allowed the right to vote after Olympia Brown tried to protest and say, well, all of these affect schools, all of these affect education, which you and I know fundamentally to be true. Mm-hmm. They denied her that right. And so they ended up doing separate ballot boxes, one for women for school-related only issues and one for men who could vote on anything they wanted. And so Olympia Brown, with her battle and her vision of equality, was truly a leader. Someone you and I both respect is Theodora Winton Yeomans. Waukesha Freeman wrote wonderful columns for them and was a true suffrage leader and activist. But my favorite story is probably the one of the ratification vote and Ada James and her dad, David, former state senator, Richland Center family. And David, by that time, had retired from the Wisconsin State Senate and just wanted to come back and witness the vote. Ada was there with him. And so he watched it all go down. They were delighted but irritated because there were some folks who were kind of playing politics with the business of the day, and it felt like they were delaying the thing because they wanted to be first. So eventually it passed, and they learned that Illinois had passed it an hour and a half ago. There was a message.
Right.
And they were a little bit panicky.
It was this race to Washington.
They decided, okay, we got to get you in the car. We got to get you to Washington, D.C., because all that really matters is not the time that the legislature passed it, but the time that you arrive at the Secretary of State's office. And so they decided, so they rushed it upstairs for the governor's signature, and they hustled David James, former senator, into a car to get him on the rails to Washington, D.C. He was totally unprepared to make this trip. So Ada, his daughter, gives him her handbag, and the Secretary of State of Wisconsin gives him a bunch of money. He says, you just don't have time to go home. You're not going anywhere. Go to Washington. And so he does. As soon as they arrive there, they pile into a taxi, make a beeline for the office, and they were first. And this is hilarious. Illinois representatives run in after they are starting to walk out. and he says, I'm from Illinois. Here we are. We're first. And the Wisconsin delegation starts laughing uproariously.
Fascinating history. Let's fast forward now.
Sure.
Six of the seven justices on the Supreme Court are women.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at who votes in most elections, women vote.
You are right, since 1980.
Okay, but women have a few more miles to go, right, in the political arena.
You've noticed that too.
Yes. So a road not less traveled, but many more miles to go.
I would say so.
Okay.
We don't see full representation of 53% of the electorate in those in elected office. I think we have 2,117 female legislators in state legislatures across the country. And, we have a record-breaking number of women in the United States Congress, but only 20 states have ever had female governors.
Mm. Okay, two final questions on politics. Why did you and Governor Walker finish second last November? What happened?
Because we got fewer votes, Steve.
Yeah, I understand that, but was the drop-off in the suburban counties?
Well, I think the evidence, the data points to that, and so we didn't make enough of a connection with some of the voters that we needed to make a connection with. But you know me, I don't bank on a certain group of people, and I also don't discount the potential of winning a vote from a different group of people. I think that this is a race of policy ideas. And if you don't communicate enough and succinctly with all of your voters, then it's very, very challenging for you to convince them to bother to come out and vote. And so my hope is that through this convention and through, you know, the discussions that I will give over the next 2 years, mm-hmm. we will continue to see a surge in the numbers of women who choose to exercise their right to vote and the 19th Amendment, because there are few things that would be more rewarding to me than to see women come out and vote in the numbers.
8 years as Lieutenant Governor. Mm-hmm. Train you to be ready to be governor someday?
I have to give a speech. It was so good to see you, Steve.
And your name should be on a list of those who might. You don't want it off that list, do you? I don't want to make you late, but it seems that's...
It seems like you're socially awkwardly keeping me here, though.
Oh, really?
Doesn't it feel like... Yeah, I feel like
Would
that.
You like to be governor?
I feel like I would love to do a really good job of my current job, and I would love for this interview to end on the note of you and everyone watching. Go to womensvote100.org in order to check out all of the amazing ways you can commemorate the centennial of women's suffrage, the 19th Amendment, across the country.
Congratulations on your new position.
Thanks, man.
Thank you very much, Rebecca.
It's good to see you.
Good luck.
Thanks.